Tonight I got nowhere to go, and I thought that I would call you and see if you were home. I'm sorry, but I'm pretty stoned. I hope I didn't scare you. I hope to God you were alone. Still fixating all those nights when we would drink ourselves familiar and count the blurry lights. All my friends have left me here. You were the only one who knew me. Sometimes I think I disappear. I would give anything to make it with you just one more time. I'd give you everything I own. I would give anything to make it with you just one more time. Give you everything I own. I really miss the ship we all guess it's time I let you fly. I can see the light is changing. I feel like getting high. I promise I'd sleep on the floor. I swear to God I wouldn't touch you. There could be no one who'll ever touch you.
Guest station engineer, and you're listening to BFF.FM.
Oh, the cable's fucked up.
That's enough. Good morning. You are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.FM. I think our cables are momentarily not fucked up.
Yeah. too early to tell, really.
I am Jessica, and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I would ask how you are, but I've been standing outside your window all day, so I know.
Well, good. That saves us some time. We are discussing season two of the Netflix runaway hit, You.
Is it a runaway?
I don't know. Got a season two. It's generated many a banal think piece, which we will get to.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts on the show, please join our conversation. We are on Twitter at BFF TV on the radio.
We'd love to hear from you at Penn Badgley.
What did you think, Leah?
I feel like Andrew Garfield in Love Actually, standing outside Penn Badgley's house with a series of cue cards saying, "This is very terrible and extremely problematic, and yet to me you are perfect." I
don't think that was Andrew Garfield, but I know what you're saying.
It was Andrew Garfield. Or no, Andrew, whatever. Anyway, the guy from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am all in for You. This second season, I liked the first season so well that I went out and bought the book that the second season is based on. Very, very loosely based on. They changed the majority of it.
Okay.
But I was very excited for this second season. And it's weird because I was like, you mentioned in your notes that you were alternately very into it, very out of the story, mm-hmm. like super on board, really back into it. And I found it slow to get started, but then I think after like the third or fourth episode, I like was watching like, you know, five episodes a night. There's 10 episodes total.
Yeah.
And I watched from episode 4 all the way through like episode 9 last night, or episode 8 the night before last. And yeah, the show is very, very soap opera-y for a serious subject about stalking and murder.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's perfect for January for me. I don't know that I would feel the same way in like a more crowded TV landscape in like July or something, but I'm doing dry January as many people are. And so
you need advice.
No, I just feel like I have clarity that I don't have the rest of the year, and I'm able to accept and welcome you as a form of entertainment in my life.
Okay. I liked it. As you said, I was kind of up and down on it. Mm-hmm. Part of the time I was like, what is this show's message? Like, I'm really having trouble. You know, the first season was good. It was like fun and salacious and like kind of horrifying.
Yeah.
Had a very, very dark ending.
Yeah.
And so for a second season, I was sort of like, do I need more of this? Mm-hmm. Like, I can only be along this journey that follows a sociopathic murderer for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was along for the journey the whole time.
I mean,
it's full of twists and turns. And I mean, ultimately, maybe I don't really need television to always have a message, mm-hmm. or to follow the journey of someone who is good.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it was definitely a fun watch.
Do you think there was a message to season two? I am on record as saying that season one was light and had, you know, I don't know. It's kind of this frothy, somewhat inconsequential show. But I'm on record as saying that season one, like, I don't know, maybe was deeper than it mm-hmm. seemed at first glance. I thought that it did some interesting things with regards to like the stories women are brought up to tell themselves and how that feeds into like being a victim,
yeah.
and you know, I don't know. Do you think that season two had a message?
I think maybe that moving to Los Angeles to escape from your problems is a really bad idea.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's a broad message about the like endless destructive powers of white privilege, mm-hmm. you know, like I was kind of thinking, you know, on a silly level, like, could there be an ugly Joe Goldberg? Like, could someone who's not devastatingly handsome play that character? But more seriously, like, could there be a Joe Goldberg who's not white?
You know? Mm-hmm.
Could there be a... So, obviously, there's going to be spoilers. There are tons of twists in this season, so tune out if you haven't watched. But, you know, the revelation about Love at the end, his love interest, who's also named Love, like, could that character have, like, she was a wealthy, white, overprivileged woman.
Yes.
And, like, that's the only reason, you know, she gets away with, literally gets away with murder because of her family's wealth, like, multiple times. And, yeah, I mean, I think maybe that's the message.
I think the takeaway is that a guy can be a literal stalker who commits murder for you. And the second you're like, hey, you know what? I'm all into this relationship too. He's like, back the fuck off, crazy. That's the only message. Is that every guy will take your interest as their cue to exit that relationship.
There's no woman that can't be gaslit.
Yeah.
You're acting crazy.
Yeah. Also that, LA does things to people, whether or not you want it to. I do feel like that's a very, I don't want to throw this out there too early, but LA is a character in this, in this season. And, I was all in for the, like, very loving skewering of LA.
Yeah.
Which also still made it look amazing and beautiful. Yeah. And why don't we all live in LA? as white people.
Yeah. The show made a kind of a show of moving the action from New York.
Yes.
Where the first season took place, where New York was made to look very beautiful and romantic, to LA that, you know, which Joe in his fucking condescending piece of shit way, like, hates everyone. He thinks, I mean, that's my major problem with Joe. It's not that he's a murderer or a psychopath. It's that he's a condescending piece of shit.
Sure.
Who thinks that he's so much better than everyone.
Yeah, he's a white guy who reads and thinks that makes him the second coming.
People who think the fact that they read books now and then is their personality.
Yeah.
It's the worst kind of person.
You're not special.
Fucking deserves to be murdered.
Yeah.
In the words of the other David Fincher in his masterpiece, The Social Network, like, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I hope you don't think I want to murder you because, you know, you're a bad person. It's because you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. What were we talking about? LA?
The message of the message of season two, if there is one. And again, like you said, I don't necessarily think that I need all my shows to have a message, but I do think that you is operating on maybe like a better level than it should be. I think that the show as a whole is better than it should be. I think it galls me to say this, but I think a lot of that is down to Penn Badgley being perfectly cast.
He is really good. I have to give him, I don't know why I'm loath to give him credit. I've never seen any evidence to suggest that he's anything but a perfectly nice man.
He writes poetry, Jess.
Oh, right. He's in a band, too.
Yeah.
I loved him in Gossip Girl, although Dan Humphrey was also an insufferable asshole.
Yeah, this is a very, very natural extension of Dan Humphrey's character.
But yeah, for some reason, I'm reluctant to give Penn Badgley credit. I don't know why. He is very good
in this really
show.
Good.
He does a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
He toggles between, like, you know, broken abuse victim and, you know, stalker psychopath extremely well.
Yeah.
A lot of the show is driven by his voiceover, which is, I mean, it's just so much of the show rests on his performance.
Yeah.
And, like, his voiceover is good. He has a very funny delivery.
He does.
A lot of the shows, you know, a lot of the writing's very funny, and he's very good at that. So I think you're right. It's a lot of it's down to him and his performance.
And I think that this is the type of show that will never be recognized for anything like that. Like, Penn Badgley is not going to be nominated for an Emmy for this show.
No.
I think that's kind of what I mean by, like, this show is doing more than it seems like it's doing.
Yeah.
It makes it seem really superficial in a way. Like, the whole thing is sort of taken as a lark. Like, yeah. And yet,
it
I think...
It was a show that was originally made for Lifetime, right?
Yeah.
And got dropped and picked up by Netflix.
Yeah, and yet, I think that they're, like, really addressing some themes in, like, interesting ways without... There's parts of the show that hit you over the head with things, but there's... I don't know. Maybe it's just our think piece culture, and now I'm constantly, like, on the lookout for something deeper, or, like, how can I hack season two of You to discover a deeper meaning? Yeah. But I do feel like it's better than it has a right to be, and it's doing things. It does what it does very, very well, and it's so compelling for me to watch. I'm, like, I have no problem binging it. It's got, like... gorgeous people, mm-hmm. beautiful setting. There's like twists and turns. There's a love story. There's sex, which we're always talking about. There's not enough sex on TV anymore. And yeah, I don't know. It checks a lot of boxes for me.
Let's talk about the other star of the show, Ira Madison III.
Yes. Keep it, Ira.
Keep it. I thought Ira did an admirable job of delivering his one line.
A pedestrian job of delivering his one line.
But Victoria Pedretti, who I've never seen in anything
nope.
else, have you?
Nope.
She played Love Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
That's an annoying name.
Yes.
What did you think of her? I was back and forth on
that. I feel like you said it best in your outline. You said, does she have a very upsetting face, or is she stunningly beautiful? And I think the answer to that is both.
Yeah. There's something about her face. It's like...
it's something to do with her mouth. There's a lot of weird mouths in the show. Penn Badgley has a weird mouth.
He's
got a lot of like spit collected in the corner of his mouth for a lot of these scenes, which I found very distracting.
Oh, that's... part of his performance.
Yes. I don't doubt it. I mean, he went method. But... yeah, there was something about her that was very unsettling throughout, mm-hmm. and maybe it's played that way to
yeah.
have the reveal in the last episode that she is also a murderer, and she has essentially been, like, testing him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't think she's the greatest actress of her generation.
I thought it really worked. I don't know if she's the greatest actor of our generation, mm-hmm. But for this role, mm-hmm. there was something like, so there was something a little bit unsettling about her.
Mm-hmm.
She plays like before it's revealed who she really is, she's kind of like a flighty but free-spirited, like she fiercely loves her family and she's very protective, but she's kind of
codependent,
yeah. And I don't know. Yeah, there's something sort of like chaotic about mm-hmm. her presence that I mm-hmm. thought really worked for
yeah.
that role. I sent you an interview with her in Harper's Bazaar. Yeah, she's not a polished interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Needed
I would
a little
read a quote,
more media
except,
coaching.
Like, it is almost so off the rails, her train of thought, that I don't think I could actually adequately read it. But
it's very LA. It's a very Love
yeah,
Quinn type quote.
Exactly.
About,
after reading that,
yeah.
I got the sense like, oh, that wasn't that much of an acting performance.
Yeah, yeah, that was my take on it too. Is that yeah,
yeah. Sorry if I'm bouncing around, but let's talk about 40, her twin brother,
yes.
who I thought was truly the breakout star
yeah.
of this. He plays. You know, just a fucking LA type monster, like
yeah.
the hanger-on type who's always like
overprivileged rich kid who
yeah.
has substance abuse issues, of course, like super mm-hmm. by the book. And
what's his like real life parallel? I feel like we know this type,
like a the fire guy,
fire crotch.
The fire. Guy who's in jail for
Firefest,
the Firefest guy, Brian. I don't remember that.
Billy McFarland,
yeah, kind of that type.
Yes, exactly.
Like, thinks he's a mover and a uh-huh. shaker, and always like one step ahead of the game. Except actually funded by his parents' money instead of scamming, you know, people who live in Bed-Stuy. But yeah, and
he was very funny.
Just a child. Just
yeah.
a baby who has never had to face anything in his life.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Like truly an asshole.
Yeah.
But I thought his journey was really good. Like, it was kind of a slow burn, his evolution, like the revelation of yeah. his character and him having this kind of hero's journey where he yeah. tries to save his sister. I optimistically thought that 40 was going to be like the final girl type character, like the only one left standing.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they're not going to kill off our main characters and let 40 be great. Yeah, my husband and I were like, predicting what was going to happen, mm-hmm. which of course I think was pretty unpredictable, but I thought 40 was gonna come out on top.
I thought 40 was gonna get killed by Joe, and because you know, Joe loves nothing more than jamming himself into an unworkable out of corner and then oozing into a pile of slime and scuttling away. but he did not. Spoiler.
No.
I read the book and
yeah, tell us how it compares to the book.
Oh, it barely compares to That's the book other than it's set in LA. Love is not, she's a filmmaker, not a baker. Which, let's get to Anavrin and that giant fucking kitchen that apparently is just for making out with your boyfriend in, like, and cooking brunch for your friends while there's an entire grocery store happening outside. Extraordinarily.
So that was a grocery store / bookstore.
Yeah, it's like a Whole Foods type thing. Okay. You know, like it's Nirvana backwards.
I picked up on that.
And they had to tell you that just in case you didn't pick up on that. They had to. But it does. Anyway, she is a filmmaker. There's she and 40 don't have the same backstory at all. And as they do in the show. There's a third twin was referenced to. It was like 40's movie. And that guy who was the third twin shows up and is in movies and is working with
her. They have another brother?
There's a whole thing in Mexico.
That's interesting that they would have invoked that in the show and then dropped it.
Yeah, I think, not to, you know, I don't know how intellectually rigorous the book was. I mean, it was certainly very enjoyable. I like plowed through it in like a 5-hour span while I was having my hair done one day. But the book is a lot more internal about Joe's voiceover. There's a lot where they sort of enjoy this like idyllic summer at their place in Malibu or whatever that was about him building a relationship with 40 and things like that. That was really different, and I think this was definitely a lot showier than the book was.
Yeah.
What they did with season two. But I at first had found the 40 character pretty charmless because obviously there's a lot more expansion in a book and you know I don't know, can get to see more of the character, and I was extraordinarily satisfied by his turn from like just this shallow gadabout cad asshole rich kid to truly trying to like help people or do something worthwhile. I think the actor who plays him was great.
Yeah. Awesome. I hope we see James Scully was his name. Mm-hmm. He I guess was in Heathers, which I think
it was on
essentially
FX,
shelved
yeah.
for in the US because we can't find a long enough space between mass shootings for it to be appropriate to have a TV show about a high school mass shooting.
Yeah.
So I hope this is a breakout for him.
Yeah.
The breakout he deserves because he was very good. But back to Joe for a second. My problem with the show is I felt like it was trying to bring us along with Joe in a way where we could have hoped for his redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Like he kept trying to convince himself that he was going to be a better person and going to stop killing people. And I just couldn't get, like, his ship is sailed. He's already killed so many people.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't that moment where he like is going to let Delilah go. Mm-hmm. And when he finds her dead, he's so wrapped up in trying to prove it wasn't him who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's too late. I don't care if you killed her or not. Mm-hmm. You know, like this, I'm not going to, I'm not going to be on board for any sort of Joe redemption. But I guess that was just sort of a misdirect because that's not what the show's about.
Yeah, I also was confused by the Kid Joe flashbacks about his relationship with his mother. And I wasn't completely clear. It looked like in the first flashback that his mom abandoned him. And then you find out later that he had killed his father or one of the random men that she was having sex with.
I don't think it was his father, but maybe a stepfather or his mom's boyfriend or something.
I wasn't sure what the goal was of that. Like you, I was kind of confused. Like, so are we pro Joe in season two? Like,
yeah,
are
we supposed to sympathize with
him? Is LA Joe like a lighter? Like, I LOL'd at the scene of him crying while having the acupuncture done by friend and him just like openly weeping. And all this, you know, like trauma lives in the body and a lot of discussion about chakras and things like that. And, you know, all the LA stuff that you would expect. But I wasn't sure what the purpose of any of that was. Are we supposed to root for Joe? Because I sure as shit don't. But, you know. And also I was unclear on his journey at the end. So he has this, does he absolve himself basically? He's like, oh, I wanted to be a good person, but now I'm pulled into this shitty situation.
I think that the reveal about love and her, you know, being a lot more like him than he expected, I think in a way he does let that absolve him. Like, he's found his counterpart, and it's not just me, you know? Like,
we're all out here killing people. Yeah. I mean, you do what you have to do for love, you know.
You're someone for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know. So then there's this obnoxious invoking of Crime and Punishment, which I find it's so cheap to invoke Dostoevsky because no one's read that. Yeah. I don't know what your point is. Like, you can just make shit up and I'll be like, okay, well, I'm not going to read any Russian literature, so I'll have to take your word for it. But he talks about the main character in Crime and Punishment, like, exiles himself, and then Quinn is pregnant. I'm sorry, Love is pregnant.
Yeah.
They move to the suburbs, and he talks about it like that's his punishment or his exile, like living in a really nice house with your rich wife.
Yeah, who's going to support you for the rest
of... Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the punishment is, but, I mean, I guess being a parent is...
Yeah, that's punishment enough. Yeah, I guess it's pretty hypocritical of Joe to be like, oh, now I'm tied to this bitch who's killed someone. Like, that's a real drag. Can I ever trust her? Were her affections true? Or was it just, you know, because she's into murder?
I guess that's punishment.
I guess, but I don't know. Isn't that also every relationship?
It's funny, like the show goes through to these great lengths to, like, dive into Joe's psyche and his past and his trauma and question whether or not he is a sociopath or just a damaged person. And then at the end, it's like he's done with this bitch he's been obsessed with and is staring through the fence at his neighbor.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm telling you. Every guy, the second you're like, I like you too, they're like, ugh, no thank you.
Yeah.
That's the big takeaway message.
Let's go to a song. I have quite a long stalker playlist. Let's do this classic from the 90s. All right, when we are back, we will talk more about you.
I will cry.
TV on the Radio, a 90s classic. Was that on the Romeo and Juliet
soundtrack? It sure was. Sure was.
Garbage, Number One Crush. All right, that's enough.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Speaking of obnoxious literary allusions, I was thinking about how this show... This was prompted by me reading a very stupid BuzzFeed listicle about the quote-unquote Easter eggs in the show. I think the internet has degraded our understanding of the relatively recent term Easter eggs to mean just like literally any detail or like self-referential moment. But yeah, the show named, like, every time a book appeared on screen, it was apparently an Easter egg, which it's not. That's not what that means. But anyway.
No, it's not.
I felt like the writing was a little high on its own supply.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 40 refers to Joe as Old Sport, which is obviously an allusion to The Great Gatsby,
yeah.
But I don't know to what end, because 40 was not a Gatsby-esque character.
Yeah.
If anything, Joe was, like,
yeah,
obsessing over a woman who he's created this idea about in his own head that's mm-hmm. not really her. Makes him more of a Gatsby, but 40's not. And the show, I think, did this all the time, just sort of like invoke things to make Joe seem smart. And I was annoyed by it, but then I was like, maybe that's an analog for Joe himself. Like, he thinks he's such a fucking genius,
mm-hmm.
and that reading books makes him special. Maybe it was like a broader metaphor about Joe.
Maybe. I'm intrigued by the... celebrity thing, which there's a whole plot about how he kills this comedian Henderson,
mm-hmm.
who is a predator. And
I completely forgot about that side plot.
Yeah, who is a predator. And I was just asking you during that song, is this the first time we've seen him do like an Avenger type killing versus
yeah.
a weird sociopathic type killing?
And so.
I'm not condoning that, but I'm just saying, but also one of the
interesting... never suggested that you should kill all men.
And one of the interesting things about this season is when it's revealed at the end that Love has killed Delilah, his neighbor. She's like, the only reason we're here is because you killed a celebrity. And I think that a lot of this season... and the prior season, actually, both kind of circled around celebrity and mm-hmm. fame and notoriety a lot. Like, Dr. Nikki, who was falsely accused of killing Guinevere Beck, is now this, like, celebrity with subreddits about him. And Beck wanted to be a celebrity. She wanted to be in that, like, literati, you know, yeah. the New York literary scene. 40 wants to be a celebrity. Henderson is a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Delilah is a celebrity. Like
a gossip
Perez
reporter.
Hilton type.
Yeah.
You know, Love is sort of a celebrity in her own way, in that she just has limitless money. And
yeah.
I think that I was like, is this supposed to be some indictment of the way, like, the only thing
seeking.
That, like, the only murder that got escalated was when it was a celebrity, like,
yeah.
they said multiple times about how, like, now the cops are never going to arrest until this is solved because it's a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can kill or be as shitty as you want to people, like, who are not in pursuit of that. I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah,
you only matter as much as your public.
Yeah. Profile. And yeah. And I think for, again, that thing about like Joe eschewing social media and like not seeking any of that fame. Like it starts off where he's like, I'm 1 in 4 million who comes to the city, not, or trying to blend in, not trying to stand out or whatever. And I think that indictment of, you know, that's where I kind of agree with you about saying like it's high on its own supply. It's like Joe does think he's super hot shit and special in a way that is all tied to notoriety, even if it's not him seeking it. Like it's all circling that same thing about like being perceived as being special.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Goldberg is fucking insufferable. Can we talk about Ellie for a second?
Sure. So Joe's neighbor, Delilah, is the hard-nosed celebrity gossip journalist.
Yeah.
And she is the guardian of her 15-year-old.
Almost 16.
Almost 16-year-old precocious sister Ellie.
Yeah, and can I just say, I loved the Ellie character so much. Ellie did not exist anywhere in the book. Delilah did not exist to the same...
Really?
Delilah did exist, but as a, she was a, you know, model or something, and somebody that Joe...
Are you sure the series is based on this book?
Yeah, I know. Very loosely. Somebody that Joe had sex with.
Uh-huh.
As he does in the show, because again, he's still super hot.
Yeah.
But I loved the character of Ellie, and I love the way she was drawn to be like really the only one who never fully bought into Joe's bullshit. Like she called him on his stuff all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
She was involved with Henderson, but Joe actually saved her from being molested by Henderson, and she didn't ever know that. But again, it was one of those portrayals of, yes, a very precocious 15-year-old or whatever, but like it just reminded me that like teen girls, man, if we could harness the power of teen girls, like I feel like they have such clarity about the world and have this like limitless power that they use as they want. And I've said before, like, I feel like in some ways, like the teen version of myself who didn't give a fuck about, like, your world is so small and you don't give a fuck about anything except what's directly in front of you. And then you're focused on that with this like laser like focus is just really powerful. And I love that they portrayed her as this like clear eyed, like full heart can't lose chick, but like this clear eyed chick who wasn't buying into any of the narrative that all these fucking adults were telling her, because she's just like, this is what I need. Like, I want to be an intern for like this guy because he's rich. I want to, like, you know, and I love that. And then at the end, she's like, fuck you. Like, you ruined my fucking life. Mm-hmm. And while that's true, she's still, you know, going to get money from him for the rest of her life. And I just, I love that.
She's the hero of the show.
Yeah, totally. I love that portrayal of just like this clear-eyed kid who's, it's just a weird period in your life as a woman where you're like coming into this power that you didn't know you had, and you're naive in certain ways, but yet you're so true to yourself because nothing has been like squashed yet. You know, you haven't had those, like, I don't know, Joe Goldberg experiences, I guess. I don't know. Or before you give a fuck about guys.
Yeah. Do you think, so the show hasn't been necessarily picked up. There's no season 3 announced.
Oh,
I feel like there will be.
There's definitely
season
3.
Like, either for season 3 or beyond, like, what do you think, where do you think this is going to go? Like, do you think... I mean, we can talk about what you think specifically for season 3, but also, like, is there going to be justice, or are the bad guys always going to win? Like,
yeah, I think the bad guys are always going to win is not necessarily a bad message.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2020.
I'm just curious. I remember watching the first season, and, like, the ending was so gruesome, but, like, it felt inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
It was, it just felt like that's how it had to end.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering if that gut feeling can be traced to the, I think Joe's going to win. He's a handsome white man. He will literally get away with everything.
Yeah. Now he's surrounded by money. Yeah. I mean, he's protected by, now he literally has nothing but time to stalk. He doesn't need to worry about it.
I didn't really think about Ellie because she sort of like was disappeared at the end of the season, but but she does feel like that final girl energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
She feels like the one who could come out on top.
And I thought that actress was great.
Yeah, she was good.
She didn't have any weird mouth stuff going on. She was great.
very beautiful.
Yeah, very, very beautiful. I would love to see it as a showdown between Joe and Ellie. And
that has to be
film
it, right?
Versus
she
books.
She knows who he is.
That's the ultimate showdown, is which medium of art is going to help you get away with murder more. I don't know. Film versus books.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think love killed her husband?
That was left unresolved, and I think no, she did not kill her husband. Do you?
How did he allegedly die?
He just got sick.
Oh.
And died. She should have stayed with her little Hemsworth ripoff puppy dog guy.
Oh, who, I didn't like that guy.
Milo. Face. No, of course not. But like, whatever. Who doesn't want a guy who's going to drive to Glendora to get you a donut in the middle of the day?
Fair enough.
Also, we talked
Looks
last
aren't everything.
We talked last season. This is something I'm still confused about. Is the message of the show that like the bar is so low now for guys that like literally a guy who will just listen to you and be attentive is going to be like a keeper at all costs? Or is the message of the show that women are so unknowable that you have to be a literal stalker so that you can convincingly portray love for women who are never going to be satisfied with any other portrayal?
You mean the... I'm not sure what you mean.
So is it that the bar is so low that a stalker... You're like, oh, this is somebody who's actually listening to me and talking to me like as a human being and who is super into me, like that. Yeah, that all gets glossed over in favor of like the emotional support that you don't get from your Hemsworth-esque boyfriend.
Like the only time you can feel seen is if someone's literally obsessed with you.
Yeah. Or or is the inverse of that true, that like, bitches will never be satisfied unless you actually do like a deep dive and stalk them and then have to, you know, convince them that you like that it's a bottomless well of,
I don't know.
Does it have something?
I feel like you've been gaslit by Joe Goldberg.
Does it have something to say
it's
about
it? There's nothing wrong with you, Leah.
I'm in a perfectly happy relationship, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Has he murdered anyone for me? Probably not, but. You know, I guess that's a sign of a good stalker, though. You just keep your body count to yourself. You don't put that emotional work on me to solve your murders. Yeah. So he really is a good boyfriend. I don't know. I'm not invested enough to quibble, but the fucking
we don't quibble.
Time frame on this show is bananas. Fucking bananas. There were multiple things. I don't know. Is it like a week after they first met? I don't know. There were multiple allusions to things being like, oh, you went and saw her this morning. And I'm like, that happened 4 fucking episodes ago. Like, how is this all spaced out? Like, I don't. Like the timing on this was really, really weird.
Maybe
like
it was purposefully disorienting to make you feel like you were
the Henderson murder, and then like the just a bunch of stuff. And what
also,
the fuck
I
with
saw
Candace?
Forensic evidence being tossed every which way. If they can't catch this, like find someone who looks at you the way the directors of this show look at a giant pool of blood, like with an absolute loving gaze.
Yeah.
And then watch Joe stomp through it in his big work boots. Like, how do they not catch this guy? He's literally covered in blood in most of the scenes.
Yeah. Also, Love's assertion that she was going to dump Delilah's body and make it look like a suicide. I don't think too many people commit suicide by slashing their own throat.
Yeah,
like, how is that going to work?
Yeah, my first thought. And then I mean, maybe the message
it's
is
all a
like,
moot point because the money like young, is going to make it all go away
yeah,
anyway.
And she's a, you know, young woman of color. She's Latina. Like, yeah. Maybe police won't look into stuff as much. But yeah, she died with her handcuffed to a table. There would be like a ligature yeah. mark around her wrist, yeah. which typically is not evidence of suicide. But yeah, the point is yeah. like they say as much that the police are in the pockets yeah. of the Quinn family. So they made one murder go away. They can do it again and again and again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So basically it's a very uplifting show.
Yeah. It's just about really about family and
two souls finding each other.
God made them. He matched them. You have to be there for your family, including your brother who's incapable of doing anything. But it turns out that he's incapable of that because he has been stunted by this fucked up, horrible family that he's been part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My other takeaway is that, like, there's literally nothing you can do to make John Stamos look bad. They tried to give him, like, tired.
They
been in
did. They
makeup.
Really he tried to make so him look handsome. Tired. He's, yeah, John Stamos could still get it.
Oh, hell yeah.
For sure. Yeah. He's going to be an eternal could get it guy.
I mean, so far.
Yeah.
I think he's 55.
Yeah.
Looks great.
He has, like, a one-year-old or two-year-old. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Good luck to those crazy kids as parents. It's going to be quite a ride.
Yeah, what is season 3 going to be about? Their toddler like pushing other kids off the jungle gym and smiling.
yeah, whether that's inherited or not. Yeah, who knows?
Is psychopathy inherited?
Sure. I don't know. I don't know. Do we think he's a psychopath?
I mean, he seems at least very troubled. Good at compartmentalizing his emotions.
Sure.
Until
sure.
he's forced to undergo acupuncture.
Yeah. In LA.
That guy was great. I forgot that actor's name, but he was the yeah. guy from Russian Doll.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, I love that guy. And I think, too, like, people talk about how it makes such a cliche of LA. And I think that it felt really affectionate to me. Like,
yeah,
I think
it definitely
it's
was
still made fun of all that LA shit, but it also truly showed like LA and love and this different way of being in the world, like having an effect on Joe. Like, and yeah. I think
it's sort of like, I mean, we were viewing LA through Joe's lens.
Yeah.
And yeah, like he stalks her while she's having brunch with her friends. And, you know, she has this very LA collection of friends that I think we're meant to see as, you know, just kind of silly LA bimbos. But mm-hmm. it turns out they're actually really good friends to her.
Yeah.
And like very, you know,
good people, nice.
Yeah. yeah. Three dimensional human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your, much is made of Seven Totems, the Seven Totems of LA, and
oh,
how
right.
when you
what
see these
they?
Seven things, you can never leave LA.
Oh, yeah.
And
a palm
Joe
tree on fire.
Joe, two starlets in the same dress.
Uh-huh.
Somebody in a superhero costume out of context. Somebody roller skating or rollerblading.
I just remembered I was walking home last night and I heard someone walking behind me on my block, like very fast. And then a woman just like sped past me in a chicken costume. And
sure.
Like, what a town.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So
that's
what
are the seven totems of San
what
Francisco?
What are the seven totems of San Francisco, though? What are okay. the seven things that once you see, you can never leave? Because Joe did see all seven, and now he can never leave. He's tied to Quinn and the baby because he has to be there.
Okay. Someone drinking red wine on the bus before 9 a.m.
Good, good. A homeless person pooping.
Yeah.
It has to be just a stream of liquid, though. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the second one.
Someone on rollerblades wearing booty shorts.
Sure, sure.
Sequin booty shorts.
LA, San Francisco, interchangeable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody dressed in a Fruit of the Loom outfit puking on Beta Breakers. or dressed somehow dressed puking somewhere.
Yeah.
Or SantaCon, any of the other bullshit
no,
dress up occasions.
Let's keep SantaCon out of this. Oh, but yeah, someone puking.
Yep. A line for buy right in a snowstorm. that's the fifth one.
If a rainstorm, maybe.
If you guys have two more totems of San Francisco that once you see them, you can never leave, please do let us know.
A very old man naked.
Yes, a naked old man penis. Yep, that's definitely one. And what else have we got?
I don't know. I feel like we're not making San Francisco sound very good. I don't know, a hypodermic needle on the sidewalk.
I was just going to say,
a hypodermic needle and a discarded Whippet canister on the same block.
Yeah, it's got to be. Okay, so let's really set the tableau. It's a hypodermic needle,
poop,
a pigeon eating vomit next to it, and then like two-thirds of a donut. Right, all in the tableau. Yeah.
All right.
It's
like any given block of Polk Street.
Yes, sure. And the pigeon is choosing the vomit over the two-thirds of the donut. That is definitely one of them.
All right, well, you heard it here, folks.
Uh-huh.
Did we get to seven?
Oh, I've definitely seen all seven of those.
Oh, for sure. I've seen all seven of those in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Shoelaces on a power line. Is that a shoe?
Oh.
Shoes thrown on a power line. Is that universal?
Shoe feety. I don't know.
I still wonder about that.
Yeah. Huh. That's really something. Or a mattress being burned in the mission.
Oh, God. I just had a like full body shiver last night thinking about the Niners possibly going to the to the big football game thing.
That is disturbing. Okay. We've got... listener Steven, thank you so much for listening, said a discarded Christmas tree burned to a crisp. That's a good one.
And in March.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So once you've seen all those, you can never leave San Francisco, guys. Oh, no. Obviously. I'm sorry. We left out like a major one. A tech vest on a one wheeler, with a blue bottle of coffee.
Yeah.
In his hand.
That's a good one.
That's
we can have more than
I don't
seven
know. Those can be the four.
Very
those,
complex
can, those can be the four.
Four
the
bonus
four ones. Horsemen of the bro-pocalypse. I don't know. I don't know. You is problematic, but it's also the only thing that has stopped my binge watching of Below Deck. So I'm glad to have been able to get that space for a while, away from one group of emotionally abusive people to another group of emotionally abusive people.
I had a stray thought because I know your journey to Below Deck was Succession's mega yachts,
sure.
And then you needed more yacht content.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then I thought, when she runs out of Below Deck, she's going to have to watch The Love Boat.
No. No, thank you.
We'll see.
Tom Hanks put the real fucking kibosh on that for me with his monologuing 27-minute speech at the fucking Golden Globes.
Oh, yeah. Whatever, is he a regular on that show?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll see what happens.
On an episode of it. No, I mean, that's the beauty of Below Deck. There's Below Deck Mediterranean. There is now Below Deck Sailboat. There is, I got all kinds.
You're set for sail.
I'm all set. What else do you have to say about you?
Not much. Ultimately, I enjoyed it. I think I was really into it.
Damage attracts damage, guys.
I resent that.
That's what Joe Goldberg should have kept in mind the whole motherfucking time.
Yeah.
And we did not talk about I Wolf You, which
I
had to hear that one more time, I was like, this is why Joe Goldberg needs to be locked away forever. I Wolf You.
His real crime.
Yeah.
Enjoy exile, motherfucker.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Stay tuned to BFF.fm for Indie Rock Girl Radio, and we'll be back next week with more TV on the Radio. Have a good Sunday.
Living in I love. Sarah Chad, but someone's listening.
To be your BFF.
BFF.FM, best frequencies forever. BFF.FM, best frequencies.